I'd like to call to order the February 19th, 2013 meeting of the Tompkins County Legislature. I guess I would say this is a subset of the Tompkins County Legislature, although we do have a quorum, I'm glad to say. The first order of business is a public hearing on the Fact Finder's report of December 28, 2012, on the sheriff, county and sheriff's negotiations with the Tompkins County Deputy Sheriff's Association. I'd like to open that hearing. Is there anyone who wishes to address the legislature? I was going to say, don't worry, we have to have the hearing. Okay. We had to open up the hearing so that I could say that the Sheriff's Association has accepted the county's position on the Fact Finder's report. So this resolves our outstanding issues with Road Patrol through 2009. So, in fact, we did get the opinion that we needed to have open the hearing and see if anybody wanted to speak. Seeing no one else, unless you'd like to add something, Joe?
No.
Then I'll close the public hearing and open the legislature meeting. Would you please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance?
Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call of members.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne, present. Mr. McKenna?
Present.
Mr. Proto is asked to be excused this evening. Ms. Pryor?
Here.
Mr. Robison?
Here.
Mr. Shinagawa?
He's coming in, I just saw him.
Mr. Stein? Mr. Burbank?
Here.
Ms. Chalk is asked to be excused. Mr. Dennis?
Here.
Mr. Shinagawa has just arrived.
Here.
Ms. Herrera?
Here.
Ms. Kiefer?
Present.
Mr. Lane?
Here.
Ms. Robertson?
Here.
11 members present.
All right, that means that a couple of you can vote no on something. I was going to say only one at a time, but all right. Are there any members of the public who would like to address the legislature? All right, legislators. Wait, I'm supposed to say proclamations, petitions, communications, and notices.
Communications are on the desk.
Excuse me, Martha?
Yeah.
There was a gentleman here waiting to speak. I don't know if he stepped out.
Okay. Would, sir, would you like to address the legislature?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Welcome.
Hello, my name is Milton Webb, and I was here before talking about living wages. I come to find in talking with people that there are a lot of people who's not making enough money to survive, and they're working a 40-hour week. Some people's not they're not even bringing home like $300 a week, and that's kind of bad, especially when you got a family to support. So I would like you all to take that in consideration. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Anyone else? All right. Actually, I was going to ask, did we decide on executive session? You think we?
Yeah.
Okay, all right. I will be asking for an executive session at the end of the legislature meeting to discuss possible personnel issue. All right. Legislators, anyone like to address the body? Mike? Stepping into the breach.
I just wanted to say that your Civil War Commission, everyone, had a wonderful lecture last Monday, a week ago Monday. It was Professor Joel Silby from Cornell University who talked about Northern Democrats. Very interesting topic. It was probably the best attended lecture of the five that we've had at that point. And we'll be having more lectures and more events, and I think the commission is following through on the charge that it's had very well. We have a new member tonight to appoint, and who I think will be a great addition to our group. guess that's all I want to say. Thank you.
Thank you, Mike. Anyone else? Okay. Well, you know, as soon as I go into something else, somebody will raise their hand. All right. As far as my own report, I'll come after the. We have a special guest, Carl Haynes. I'd like to have welcome you, President of Tompkins Community College. Welcome, Carl.
Thank you. As I'm getting started, I have two brochures that I want to pass around. This is my annual report, which is usually my thing when I come down here. That's usually what I'm sharing. There's 4 or 5 extra copies, so we can leave those maybe for public if they have it. And also, this is a brochure that I'm going to be sharing about just briefly. It's more comprehensive to the entire community college system in New York, and it's what we're sharing with all kinds of state legislators. I'm sorry, I'll get right over there. I'm just trying to pass it.
Okay, here we go. With respect to my report, I would just bring to your attention that the focus, of course, and all that we're doing is on student success, and it starts off with that kind of background and then deals with all the various kinds of elements that we're doing at the college to support that. I'm not going to go into detail on this because I'm going to approach my time with you tonight a little bit differently in sharing 3 other kinds of messages, but to some extent it'll overlap. But again, later, if there are any questions on this, my annual report, why, after you've had a chance to review it, why I'd be happy to comment on those. And this document is something that was done statewide. It reflects it was based on an economic impact study of all of our community colleges in New York State, including the SUNY and CUNY community colleges. And then you'll notice a little soundbite from each of the community colleges highlighting something from their respective colleges, and then our lobbying position for this upcoming budget year. So again, I thought I would share that with you this evening as well. What I want to share in my remarks tonight, I just want to give you a brief, very brief, I hope, highlight on where we are at with our current year budget situation, enrollment, a little bit about the governor's proposal for next year support. Again, briefly, be happy to answer questions later if there are any. And then I have 3 kind of core messages that I really want to elaborate on tonight that are impacting not only TC3 but community colleges, I think, around the country. First of all, with respect to our current budget year, our enrollment is off approximately 6% in terms of our fall to spring enrollments, which is our core part of our enrollment. Part of the reasoning for that is additional restrictions on the financial aid system, particularly the federal financial aid. Our own efforts to increase academic standards clearly is affecting probably about half of that loss this year. And the other thing we're noticing is increased numbers of people being turned down for parent loans, people trying to get parents trying to borrow money for their kids' education and not being able to borrow the money. So those are factors that's affecting most of the community colleges, actually around the country, but partly with the exception of maybe 4 or 5 here in New York, most of us are experiencing enrollment decline. We're addressing that, of course, with some reduced expenditures of about $500,000. We'll be drawing on some of our reserve funds and partly be asking for some contribution toward the fund balance as we get through the year. The only good news I got on that respect is that when we finished out this past year, you recall I had asked for approval for $150,000 from the fund balance. When we closed out the year, we did not need to use that money, so that's being returned to the fund balance. As far as the governor's proposal for next year, base aid remaining flat at $22.72. SUNY is characterizing that as good news. We're not that thrilled with that prospect. We are continuing, and all of the respective stakeholders and community colleges are supporting a $260 increase in our base aid and $260 increase in base aid and $205 increase in each of the next 3 years. And the game plan is that at the end of that 4-year period, we would be up to the 1/3 level. Not the 40% level where we should be. There is proposed language in the governor's budget to ask for annual reporting on our career programs to detail how they're aligning with employment needs in our respective communities, drawing on our EDC and DOL data. We find this, we have 23 career AAS degree programs, a total of about 870 FTEs. That's about 25% of our enrollment. Again, part of this reporting is if it doesn't meet DOL and DOB standards and SUNY standards, why we would be disallowed the base aid for those FTEs. So I'll be commenting more on that a little bit later, but in our view, that's putting steroids into accountability. Child care being reduced, about $17,000 impact on our daycare center. We're hopeful that the legislature will restore that, as has occurred in recent years. And there's also a $3 million fund for performance-based funding. That's a new initiative on the part of the governor. That money is monies that are coming from the fact that the enrollment in community college system last year was under-enrolled, and so he's appropriating that money, a portion of that money. There was a lot more money than that was left over. And, again, the details on how that would be allocated and what the metrics would be is really unknown at this time. The good news is that our master plan, the state portion of the master plan was funded, 3.525 for the state share. If you recall, you know, this legislature in Cortland approved the $7.05 million master plan project for the college. So that would be the last step in the approval process, assuming that that does go through, which at this point is quite likely. I'd be happy to expand on any of those points. I know I went through that kind of quickly for you. But what I want to do is I want to kind of share three other messages and elaborate a bit on that. First of all, I want to share a little bit more about the strong ongoing focus of student success that is our focus at TC3, and not unlike what's going on in community colleges around the country. Additionally, I want to comment on what I feel is increasingly a disconnect in the discourse between what's going on in the political and public discourse with respect to the mission of the community college. And then lastly, there is what I'll characterize as kind of the shifting landscape in higher education today and how we're having to respond to a lot of those changes that are kind of swirling about us. With respect to the first one, in one way or another, the likely metrics for the state performance-based funding initiative is going to involve how we measure student success. And for us at TC3, we have three key institutional metrics that we use. First of all the national and state data relies upon first-time, full-time students in the fall semester cohort. And then the second is the percentage of students that successfully transfer from that same cohort. And then we also look at the most recent year's graduates and how many of those graduates were employed in self-reported data at the time of graduation. So I'll be commenting on those in just a minute. We obviously have a lot of other metrics that we use along the way to kind of give us some kind of evidence of how we're doing, both on an annual and a biannual basis. The data itself is data that we report to SUNY and then goes on to an organization called IPEDS. IPEDS stands for the Integrated Post-Secondary Education Data System, and this is something that's available for the public to look at, and they define the kinds of data elements that we have to provide. And the reason I'm mentioning this is because this metric of first-time, full-time, which is something, again, you see in the popular press as well as in the higher ed journals, for community college really understates, I think, really our success, if you will. For example, when you talk about first-time, full-time students, it's rare that we would have a student entering our nursing program each year that's a first-time, full-time student. Most of those students come in from other backgrounds, okay, or previous educational experiences, which is to say that the 60 graduates that we had last year from our nursing program don't count in our IPEDS data, nor do students who begin with us on a part-time basis and ultimately graduate. So these and other kinds of limitations, if you will, on this data, at the 2007 graduation cohort, we had 24% of those students from 2007 that graduated after six semesters and 29% that graduated after 8 semesters. Now, that may sound like low numbers, but when you kind of take out the fact that a lot of those students, a lot of our graduates, if you will, didn't get counted in those metrics, it helps to explain that, I believe. The 5% increase over those last 2 years, I think, between the 6th semester and 8th semester, which again sounds like a long time, but a lengthy time, but it's again reflective of the fact that many of our students stop in and out of a part-time, full-time kind of status. By the way, our data of a comparative group of 10 community colleges, we were pretty much right in the middle of our grouping. During that same cohort, we had 26% of our students transfer to upper division colleges. And again, the similar group of comparative colleges, we were first in that group. And then in 2011, we had 91% of our graduates that year self-reporting that were either employed, transferred, or both. So we have a whole lot of initiatives going at the college. I've got them in my report here. For sake of time, I'm not going to go through them all. But we have peer mentoring and learning communities and early academic warning and 24/7 tutoring service. And I got 20 items here, so I'm not going to spend time talking about them all. But the bottom line, I think, of what we're doing to try to assure and increase these metrics, if you will, for student success, and that we have many other initiatives that focus on this, but it's coupled with what I feel is excellence in terms of what we do. The students need to know that whether it's a strong academic standards at the college or a wide range of intervention initiatives that we have or the small class sizes that we offer, that they are indeed attending, one tough community college. And that, but we also, in being tough, have great passion for their success. Second message has to do with this disconnect that I mentioned a minute ago between the political public discourse and the role of a comprehensive community college. Now, what's a comprehensive community college? I'm probably speaking to the choir here in some respect. I think you folks are well informed on that. But a comprehensive community college has three vital elements to its overall mission. We prepare students for transfer to baccalaureate degree programs with our AA and AS programs. We prepare students for a career, immediate employment into a career with our AAS degree programs and certificates. And we also serve local employers and businesses with a broad range of non-credit training programs through our Center for Adult Learning and Training. We offer 45 degree programs at TC3. 26 of these programs are AS and AAS degrees. I'm sorry, AS and AA degrees. And 19 are AAS degrees. And the breakout in FTEs is roughly around 1,700 for the transfer programs and about 870 for the career-focused programs. That doesn't add up to our 4,000 FTEs. I realize that because there's a lot of other cohorts in there that are included in that. And each year we serve about 3,000 or 4,000 people in our non-credit training. And just some examples of that. Again, I've got a lot here, but I'll just highlight a few. Tompkins Financial Corporation, we did some lean office training. Marietta Corporation, Excel and supervisory skills. Seaboard, sustainable chest-driven development. I'm not sure I know what those mean. Some of these things mean, but Square Deal Manufacturing, we did some training on geometric dimensioning and tolerancing. At Storic HE Turbo Blading, leadership training. Pyotech, we did shop math, and again, the list could go on. But I'm particularly concerned, I think, with the governor's proposal that uses the language of training. Our non-credit programs that I've just mentioned could be referred to as training. They're developing skills that can be used immediately to improve one's performance on the job. However, our career-focused degree programs have a much broader range of educational objectives and a specialized skill, with the inclusion of general education core courses such as writing, mathematics, critical thinking skills, science, humanities, social sciences, that provide a foundation for employment and eventually continuing on into additional more advanced education. This public political discourse, which is evident throughout the country at the federal, state, and local level, seems to focus on only one aspect of our overall mission. And let's keep in mind that most of our transfer programs that prepare students for baccalaureate education and even more advanced degrees are also preparing students for jobs that require this more advanced learning. This discourse does not seem to acknowledge this at all, and it's most telling that the governor's specific proposal for upper division colleges and universities including independent colleges, does not hold them to the same level of accountability as are their community colleges. So these additional accountability requirements that are proposed for community colleges here in New York State are in addition to already existing reporting and assessment standards. Every 5 years, each of our 45 degree programs undergoes a comprehensive evaluation that includes an analysis of enrollment trends, employment and transfer trends, close review by advisory committees to assure content of courses is meaningful to their respective needs, an independent non-TC3 expert in the respective discipline who also reviews the analysis and data. These reports are submitted to SUNY. They become a part of additional reporting that we do in compliance with SUNY requirements and, of course, are reviewed by our Middle States reaccreditation process. I also feel compelled to point out that before we can even offer a new degree program, that we must develop a need based on local employment data to assure via letters of support from the upper division colleges that the program is meeting the respective needs. And this process entails not only secret ballot votes by our faculty, but it goes through our college forum, two or three reviews by our board of trustees, and then on to State Ed and SUNY for further approval. So it's very comprehensive. The bottom line here is that with this assessment and analysis of all of our degree programs prior to and throughout the life of our programs, that we really need another level of review that involves input from DOL and the REDCs as to whether we should be eligible for our base aid funding. The assessment work I've outlined above does at times lead to program termination. For example, a few years ago, we terminated our aviation science program. It takes a 2 or 3 year process to terminate a program because we have a contract in essence with students that requires us to continue to offer the courses to assure that their completion. We also have changed degree focus oftentimes. Our electrical tech program a few years ago has changed to electrical engineering tech. Construction tech has been changed to environment, construction environmental tech, and so on. So, you know, these ongoing reviews lead to oftentimes significant curricular changes. So what I've highlighted above is how TC3 and all really of our comprehensive community colleges achieve our threefold mission. And the recent dialogue on the job training aspect of what we do, I think, risks an inappropriate narrowing of our overall mission. The third and final message that I want to share tonight has to do with how we're managing change in a time of a shifting landscape in higher education. There are several dynamics in higher ed today that make up really a rapidly changing landscape and that we for how we need to respond. Some of these dynamics are still emerging, and exactly how they're going to impact our community college and TC3 in particular remains to be seen. I referred earlier to the subtle but real changes in financial aid and the impact on community colleges. Now, this impacts community colleges much more directly than other sectors of higher education, and a lot of the parents of our students have financial hardship and so on. I've got a list of a few others here that I'm not going to go into detail on, but I'm just going to kind of highlight a few of these other aspects, if you will, of the shifting landscape. The completion agenda, which I've talked about a couple of minutes ago, is challenging us to graduate a greater percentage of students who enroll in a time when the reporting requirements threaten the resources that we need to help the students succeed. Of course, the college readiness of the students who enroll remains a major and challenging aspect of this as well. The increase on job readiness, which I just spoke about a couple of minutes ago. The significant media focus in the past couple of years in particular that raises doubts in the minds of many as to the value of a college education. This type of publicity does discourage many, I believe, from seeking a college education. Our tuition, though it has increased in response to reduced state aid, is still a bargain in the overall higher education landscape, and for the most needy, it's covered, of course, by TAP. And I do believe that this kind of public discourse is really having an impact on discouraging some from attending college. The governor's proposal is just one example of many different models being talked about around the country, and whether any of these will be implemented and proven effective remains to be seen. The emerging modes of delivery of education is seeing significant technological advances. Online, of course, interactive video, online text resources, the emerging of MOOCs. If you haven't heard of that, that stands for Massive Online, Open Online Courses. How they're going to be certified for credits and so on. Seemingly constant need to respond to either actual revenue cuts or effective cuts in revenue due from lower enrollments as our costs, of course, continue to go up. Seemingly constant number of additional assessment and accountability requirements that add to our administrative burden and cost. Increasingly, these measures that are imposed by well-meaning state and federal agencies ignore what someone has described as today's student swirl as they move in and out of numerous colleges. You know, it's the exception more than the rule today, where a student actually come to a two-year college and 2 years later graduate from the same college, or go to a four-year college and 4 years later graduate from the same college. Students are moving in and out of campuses, and of course, the metrics by which we're judged don't take that into account, as I commented on earlier. Well, these are just a few of the items that are forcing us to change how we function and how we serve our students. And I note these factors, and there's others that I could kind of comment on, to make two major points. First, I believe that at TC3 we are effectively managing and responding to these changing dynamics. My reports to you over the recent years, including the current annual report that I shared here tonight, I believe testify to the award-winning technology support, both in and out of our classrooms. We're among the first in online learning and now moving quickly and developing web-based textbooks for our students at little or no cost. A multitude of lean office initiatives to help curtail costs. Broad range of global initiatives that bring cultural enrichment to our campus and contribute to much-needed financial resources. We're one of the two largest concurrent enrollment providers in the entire SUNY system. And we've been applauded by SUNY and Middle States for our multifaceted assessment metrics. The list, I think, could go on. And secondly, I briefly highlighted earlier that we have been and will continue to be laser-focused on student success. In summary, I don't want some of what I've been sharing here tonight to be viewed as pessimistic in any way. In actuality, I actually feel optimistic about our future as a comprehensive community college serving the people of our communities. I believe that when we look beyond the view out of the windshield and look at the radar screen of the future, that TC3 will be an essential provider of state-of-the-art educational experiences for our students. We will be effectively serving the needs of our area employers and our communities. Our enrollments will stabilize and grow modestly. And even if those with tendencies to want to micromanage us from afar succeed in their efforts, we'll suck it up and do what we have to do, and we will prevail. The real basis for my optimism is that your community college has a foundation of talented and dedicated faculty and staff at all levels, along with an informed board of trustees who represent our communities well with wisdom and insight, and a supportive local legislatures representing our sponsoring counties of Tompkins and Cortland. All this indeed informs my belief and my core belief in the great future for TC3. So with that, apologize for maybe taking a little longer than you were hoping for, maybe, but I'd be happy to answer any questions that you have.
Thank you very much, Carl. That was very comprehensive and very interesting. And I wasn't sure, is suck it up the technical term?
Right. It's one of our educational objectives.
All right, Mike and then Peter.
Carl, I wonder if you might comment on the issue of intercounty chargebacks and also on the two new program initiatives in the Farm to Bistro program.
The intercounty chargeback, can you just, what is it you'd like me to say?
Some counties are complaining because they have to pay the chargeback fees to counties with community colleges, but they might not have as much.
Yeah. Depending on, that could be another 10 minutes. I'll try to narrow it down. That is a major issue. I'm sure if you've been in the county association, I know that they're on the case with that. By the way, one of the things I didn't mention in my opening remarks is that at our president's meeting last week, Steve Aquario, who's the executive director of your county association, came to our president's meeting and is writing letters of support for our lobbying agenda this year. He's very good, and there's a much closer working relationship, I believe, with his role in the county association and our community colleges. That said, this matter of chargeback is kind of complicated because when it comes up, there's two or three issues that underline it. One, of course, is the so-called FIT issue, where FIT now is authorized to offer baccalaureate and master's degrees. Fashion Institute of Technology down in New York City. They're considered a community college, okay? That could be debated by a lot of people, but that's technically where they're located. And their chargeback rate is enormous compared to ours. The average community college chargeback rate is somewhere in the $2,000, $2,500 range. FIT's chargeback rate is $10,000. Okay, so I don't know if you have any students Joe would know, or you do have probably a couple of students from Tompkins County that go to FIT, and so that part of you accounts for a big chunk of your overall chargeback going to another college. There is a legislation this year of funding and appropriation for $11 million, I should say, to pay for FIT's chargeback for students at the baccalaureate and master's level. So that burden wouldn't fall to local sponsors. Whether it succeeds or not, nobody knows. The other issue is there are a few counties who, and this is legal, this is not illegal by any stretch of the imagination, I hope I'm not putting ideas in any of your thoughts, but who assign chargebacks to the townships. They take that tax burden off the county roll and put it on the township roll. And there's about 8 counties that do that, and that has become a major issue in some counties, okay, because the townships, I'll use one example. There's a township up in Erie County that is people there, and it's a pretty significant population. I can't tell you which one it is, but the people that live there are much closer to Niagara Community College than they are Erie. All right, so there's a lot of chargebacks going over to that county, and you know, so Erie County is unhappy with that. They want to try to force those students to go to Erie Community College. Well, you can't dictate where students are going to go. And then, frankly, you have some counties like Albany County, and we could go on and name a couple of others that don't have a community college, have a large population base. Their students go out of county, and they've got, you know, several million dollars worth of chargeback. Mm-hmm. Well, somebody ought to remind them that they don't have a community college to pay for either. Okay, that chargeback rate that they're paying is probably a pretty good deal compared to what others of you have to pay. Some of the issue is just plain they don't want to pay the bill, or they're dealing with, or you're dealing with the 2% cap. They want it to go away, but nobody's coming up with it. You know, where's the money going to come from to replace that for the community colleges? So, you know, it's a hodgepodge of issues depending on where you're sitting and so on. So, I didn't know how to shorten that anymore, but I can clarify.
Another thanks. I just want folks to keep that in mind as the legislative session is working this year.
Okay. The two degree, the Board of Trustees approved, last month, a degree in sustainable agriculture and food systems, so AAS degree program, getting back to the employment need, and a program in culinary arts, and they're off to SUNY for approval and then state ed, and we're in the process of developing, you know, some lab of organic farm on campus. I say on campus, but it'd be contiguous to the campus with our foundation.
Did I just come unplugged? Is that unplugged or is it still on?
Chargeback.
Okay, this is other duties as assigned, is it? Maybe I can't do it. All right, sorry about that. And then I think most of you know that we're exploring the idea of having a culinary lab here in downtown along with a restaurant and so on. So we're still kind of in the early stages of trying to formulate that and how it's all going to work through the aegis of our foundation, but we're moving ahead with those initiatives.
Thank you.
Thank you, Carl. Peter?
Yeah, that was a lot of big mouthfuls, and I'm not sure I've chewed them all. But one question occurred to me. Do the community colleges in New York have a statewide association, lobbying association? Is there a way to be connected with the counties to help you in specific lobbying efforts against things like you talked about that we would never hear of before. We would never hear of unless we were told about it.
Yeah. Yes, to all of those. There's a Community College Association of Presidents, okay, which all 37 community college presidents. Now, there's 30 in SUNY and 7 community colleges in CUNY, the City University of New York. And we all have one association that's made up of our respective presidents. And among other things, okay, we do lobby at this time of the year in terms of budget needs and try to get both the SUNY and CUNY systems of one voice in terms of what we're asking for, which we are at this point in time. There's also a parallel association of all the trustees of our campuses, of our community colleges. CUNY doesn't have the same kind of governing system of trustees that the other 30 community colleges have, but there's 10 trustees at each campus, including the student, and they have their own association that meets a couple times a year, and they, too, we work collaboratively with them in terms of our lobbying message. There's also a faculty council that's made up of faculty representatives from each of our campuses. And as I just mentioned a little while ago, we're beginning to forge a stronger relationship with the county association, okay, through Steve Aquario, who, by the way, is a community college graduate, okay, so at Herkimer Community College. So he really understands community colleges, values them, and but obviously has to respond to the kinds of pressures he's getting from this 62 counties or whatever it is around the state, where a lot of them have different kinds of ways that they want to frame their issues and so on. But I think they're all agreed that if we can get support for the getting our funding back up toward that one-third level, which is the game plan here, that takes a little pressure off of the county's need to do their part. So I think there are stronger working relationships are being forged with all those, as well as other workforce groups and things like that.
Thanks.
Leslie?
Thank you, Carl. I think I heard you said earlier about sort of the difficulties around financial aid and loans of parents, and I'm wondering if there's been some forecasting on how you think that would impact the college.
Well, it's been a definite impact this year. I mean, the kinds of things, for example, in Pell, you know, the money, the same amount of aid is there in terms of a Pell grant,
mm-hmm.
okay, but they ratcheted up and limited the number of people that are eligible for it.
Right.
You know, for example, it used to be a student could come to a community college and finish 24 credits and get the equivalency of a high school diploma if they had never finished their high school education. Well, now you're not allowed to do that. I mean, mm-hmm. we get about 30 students a year and with people that are pursuing that avenue. Oftentimes they're very good students. Mm-hmm. It isn't like they didn't finish high school because they weren't bright enough to do so. They had other issues that came up.
Right.
But those students are no longer eligible for Pell. I could go on with some of the other kinds of things where number of semesters they have to be able to have a satisfactory completion and all this kind of thing. But all that has had the effect of reducing the number of students that are eligible for Pell support.
Wow.
And in our own academic standards, you know, ratcheted up too. And I don't apologize for those. I think we did the right thing. We're one of two community colleges in the state with the strongest academic standards in terms of where we expect students to be after a semester or two semesters, depending on where they're at. So, but we also do a lot to support and help them get there. So, I get off track in answering your question?
No.
Is that okay?
It's all fine. Right. Thank you.
Yeah. The state program hasn't changed. You know, in previous years, there's been threats to the TAP program, and that's the good news part, that, you know, basically if students meet the income requirements, probably most of their tuition is paid for. But today, that's maybe a third of what the overall cost is.
Yeah.
You know, because you got the books, you got housing, you got food, you got daycare, you got a lot of other things that need to be paid somewhere with some other resource.
Yeah. Thank you.
Carl, I have a question. You went quickly by everything, but would you expand a little bit about the governor's proposal for, you said that something has to go through the Department of Labor and the regional councils? Tell me, describe.
Yeah, let me elaborate on a bit. What the governor is proposing is that all of our AAS programs, we have 19 of them, I think, that I mentioned.
What does that mean, AAS?
Associate in Applied Science. In other words, our career programs, the programs where students are expected to be employed at the end of their program, upon completion of the program. managed to lose the focus.
What does the governor want?
The relationship with the so what the governor's proposing in the legislation is that every year, okay, we have to be able to document using DOL or REDC data, or possibly we could use this. Actually, this is a question mark kind of thing. Statements or letters from employers that there's a need for that program to continue in our community. Okay, and if we can't do that based on those kinds of data, then we would be required to phase that program out. Now, when you read the language in the legislation, it sounds much worse, frankly, than the way it's been presented to us. Last week when we were with our president's meeting, a fellow by the name of Ian Rosenblum, who was a policy coordinator for the governor, who drafted the legislation, the proposed legislation, came to our meeting, okay, to try to defend what this was all about. And the way he views it was very different than the way we were reading it. You know, he sees it as very streamlined in terms of the reporting. Literally, he characterized it as a check mark. You know, you check it off if you're okay, and you just send that in once a year, and you're okay. You know, I've been around long enough to know that once you get a piece of legislation and it works its way into a bureaucracy, it's a lot more than a check mark, you know, to make it through the process. So I think there's a lot of skeptics. And as I was saying in some of my remarks, you know, we're already held accountable for validating and or updating and or responding to local employment needs with a whole host of reviews and reports and that sort of thing. And to have to do this on an annual basis just seems so redundant. And we're putting a risk, you know, if SUNY or whoever else is looking at the DOB or somebody else is looking at the data, thinks that, well, we're not too sure that really is a way, is sufficient, then, you know, we could be forced to either do away with the program or lose the base aid for those students.
I mean, your annual basis is ridiculous. I mean, things change quicker than that, and, you know, or you might want a program might need to build up support and connections to employers, et cetera.
But it's interesting because when I was trying to present to Ian the point that, look, we have to do this every 5 years anyway. Why don't we fine-tune what we're already doing maybe to try to meet your needs? But his response was just sort of the opposite, that, you know, these jobs change much more quickly. But yeah, but that's what we're doing with our advisory committees every year, is getting their input in terms of modifications in curriculum or course content or course sequencing or whatever we might be responding to some kind of changes occurring in the field. But he wasn't buying it.
Either the Department of Labor or the Regional Council has
right.
to say. And you answered to two different regional councils, in a sense.
Right, yeah.
Okay.
So I guess we get to pick which one we're going to do.
Okay, so I'm going to go out on a limb and say the Southern Tier Council will okay everything you want to do. So.
Okay, great.
No, that's only a little bit of joke. They keep trying to put things off onto the council to evaluate that we don't have ability to evaluate, either staff or expertise. And so it ends up being, all right, we'll just rubber stamp things. And it's really, I'm pretty cynical about that.
Well, too. I think there's, from what I was hearing in Albany last week as well, is some discussion in terms of the increasing strength, I guess, if you will, of how the governor is using the REDCs and the role of the state legislature itself. And in terms of prioritizing project and allocating funding through our communities and district and regions and so on. And I don't know where all that's going. Apparently, in some quarters, it was pretty strongly held concern on the part of some of the state legislators. And I don't know quite how they're going to view this language for the community colleges. I think they're trying to figure that out, and I didn't get a good read on that at this point.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else?
Well, as always, thank you for your support. And as you read the brochures that I left tonight, if there's questions that come up or anything you would like clarified any further, why you know how to reach me.
Thanks very much, Carl.
Great. Thank you.
We appreciate your time and the materials and all the information. Thank you. I'd like to work backwards here for a second. We have another person who came in late for public privilege of the floor. Mr. McPherson, would you like to address us?
Thank you very much. My name is Stanley McPherson. I'm pressed for time because I got a TV program, Reverend Benson, so I was glad he left me a little something. All I need is 3 minutes. What I want to say is the living wage, our continuous coming here is trying to impress upon you all, ladies and gentlemen, that it's very much needed. We work at the Reed Community Recycling Center. We do a good service for Tompkin County, for even on the outskirts. We do our best to make sure that the recycling plant goes on, efficient, safety, update. So we are definitely doing our job. But we are not getting paid what we like, what we need, according to the wages, according to the living wages, the living in Ithaca, Tompkin County. We are not getting their wages, so we are saying we're coming here impressed continuously. We are not going to stop coming because we need the wages. We need a living wage. And so we're trying to get people signatures. We're trying to get, because we know other people is going through it. Some people are trying to get 2 or 3 jobs. They can't get it. Some people are getting fired. So we know that it's hard times. We know that you can't make it on rent. You can't make it with food. You know, the food pantries is helping us out. We are helping people out. We volunteer. So we, you know, we saying that we need a living wage. And we need you to put something in play. We've been going around the ball game. We've been, you know, first base, second base, third base. We need to go home. So we need you to put something in play so the county can work with us. They say they're willing to work with us. They're willing to move money around. But you have the last say-so. And so we're asking you to put it in play so they can follow your resolution. They can follow your rules, your law. They can follow it, but they're waiting for it. This is what we are coming here to say. We have people. We're trying to stir things up. Our representative, he's moving. He's going different places. He's stirring things up. The TV broadcast, they're stirring things up. Other people are stirring things up. But we are saying we need a living wage, and we need it now. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I will tell you that we, although county government moves a little more slowly sometimes than we'd like, we are developing a policy initiative to look at this and have both of our, the two relevant committees, budget and government operations, to begin a thorough discussion about the issue and how it relates to our contracts and our all of our employees. So that'll be in the works starting next month. Kathy?
That's great news. Do you have any time frame on the policy initiative?
Joe, do you want to talk about it?
Yeah, I can. My office has been spending some time working on what we're calling a framing memo that tries to provide context, an explanation of where we are, what the rules are right now, about what other communities have done, and some of the things that we may want to think about if we want to revise our policy, which right now is a very broadly stated policy. It really doesn't give anything in the way of specifics about should any organization be excluded, should any employees be excluded, you know, what are really the implementation rules. Our current resolution and policy is silent on those kinds of things. So we drafted a memorandum. I will be presenting that at GO and Budget next week. They both meet next week. The idea isn't to do start and finish in one meeting. It's to present the memo at that time. that includes a recommended kind of approach to what do we do next to look at policy and perhaps develop changes. The idea would be to come back the following month at both committees after people have had a chance to look at the memo, think about it, talk about it, and really get into the teeth of policy review and development. So that's the timeline. Over the next 45 days, I think that's where the intensity of review would occur, beginning with, again, a memo that I'll circulate next week.
Great. Thank you very much.
All right. Other items under my report. Since we last met, we had the NYSAC Legislative Conference in at the end of beginning of February, and Will was there. Joe and I also went. We have gotten the we have a copy of all the resolutions that were passed, and although it's sort of weighty and sort of heavy going, it is a good statement of the policy positions that NYSAC is taking and lobbying on with the governor and with the legislature. So we'll put that over on the on the mailboxes over there. I think it's also online. These resolutions are always posted online as well. I would also want to let you know that we were that, and I emailed this. I believe I emailed this to you when it came out. NYSAC did. Steve Aquario did release the following statement about hydrofracking. As counties continue to struggle with mandates under the tax cap, we are concerned about a potential new mandate, fracking. In Monday's budget testimony, that was a couple weeks ago, the Commissioner of Environmental Conservation said there will be an impact on local governments, but insisted the costs could not be analyzed because we haven't had hydrofracking yet in New York. Will counties be left holding the bag? We call on the state to analyze the costs before drilling starts. Counties need to know what we're getting into and how fracking will impact our budgets. So that statement got some press in the coverage in the press. I think it was very helpful in meetings that I subsequently had with several state senator staff in Albany and also with the lieutenant governor. And unknown exactly, you know, what kind of leads to what, but I was personally very pleased that Commissioner Shaw did a week ago today say that he needs at least a couple more weeks to think about the public health impacts. We were, I think, very pleased that he is looking at the three major studies that are going on, the EPA study on water resources, and two health impact studies that are just getting started with the University of Pennsylvania and Geisinger Health Services in Pennsylvania, also in Pennsylvania. So the although that only addresses one of the three major studies that elected officials to protect New York have called on, most of you have joined that group. You remember that we also asked that a socioeconomic study be done that considers the cost and not just the benefits, and a cumulative environmental impact study also be done. But at least one of the issues, it appears, may get the time it needs before fracking is allowed in New York, before they make a firm decision on whether it would start in New York. So I think we probably have another week or week and a half, according to the timetable Commissioner Shaw laid out last week, before we sort of find out what his recommendation will be to Commissioner Martens. And, of course, we're all also aware that Governor Cuomo's position has a lot to do with what the two commissioners have to say. So, at any rate, we do understand this has pushed off the deadline. They won't meet that February 27th deadline for the regulations as proposed. So, at the moment, I think it's good news, and we'll wait to see what else happens. Those are, Will or Joe, if you had anything to add about NYSAC. I mean, it seems a while ago. I'm trying to scare up what we heard. But Okay. If there are no questions, Kathy Lewis?
Well, you know, rumors have been flying, and today I heard something on I saw something on a website about state forest land being cleared, apparently in preparation for pads and for roads for possible hydraulic fracturing. Does anybody know anything official about that that isn't just a rumor?
I haven't heard anything about it, but I also, there was also a big flurry on email at the end of last week about DC has a database of permits that have been requested. And apparently it auto-refreshes every so often, every day or week, I don't know. Somebody noticed that it had just been updated and sent out all these alerts, you know, red alert about, you know, oh, here's the list. They're going to start fracking anyway. No, it turns out it was just an auto refresh, and there was nothing new about the list. That list has been up for 3 years, as it, you know, there was no change.
For some people, it was news, though, when they saw the list of the number of counties and the potential locations. It was sobering.
That's true, and everybody thinks, well, it's just the five counties that we think about. But I think Madison was in there, Delaware, other counties that aren't in the so-called sweet spot. So it did get some attention. That's true. Which is good. People need to know that this is really potentially across the entire state. I haven't heard that about the clearing the lands. Has anybody else heard that?
Yes.
Okay. Do you know anything more about it?
I don't know anything more than I think Kathy knows.
Okay. I thought the state, the second Esgeist, actually said that there shouldn't be surface drilling on state forests. So I don't know if... there's nothing new. They have said, and I believe that there's nothing new going on yet. So.
Well, I'm sure noticing a lot of white trucks driving through Tompkins County. How about y'all? It looks to me like we're getting traffic already just going through the county to Pennsylvania or wherever.
Well, vertical drilling is still loud. I mean, that's always been loud. Jim?
I hope I didn't hear what I heard you say, Martha, but I find it stunning that a state official would say they really didn't understand or they haven't determined what the impact on counties would be of a potential like natural gas drilling. And so I'm assuming from that the communication between states is ground to a halt because I can drive 32 miles and run right into Bradford County and have heard and read what kind of impact it's been on that county. And it's just stunning to me that we have that kind of we have those kinds of leaders and they run that kind of stuff out as legitimate government speak. And I feel like we have a very difficult task ahead as county legislators and just members of the public in New York State about that issue.
You're absolutely
right.
And
I'm not running for anything, and by the way.
No, Commissioner Martens, in December 2011, actually said, because the socioeconomic study that was done by Ecology and Environment was in the second Esgeist, and it was roundly criticized because it only talked about the jobs and the tax revenues we'll get. And the last paragraph said, there will be these other impacts, like problems with housing and health care and public health and roads and bridges and law enforcement and emergency services, but, you know, we can't quantify those. Martens acknowledged December 2011 that, oh, yeah, I guess we better have Ecology and Environment go back and take a second look. So that's more than a year ago. When we met with him in November, we said, where's that study? Oh, well, they haven't. It's really hard to quantify the costs. As you said, Jim, just go to Pennsylvania. So then when he testified at the budget hearing 2 months later, the legislators asked him, where's that study? And he said the same thing. It's really hard to calculate. Golly gee whiz. So that was how actually we got the statement out on ISAC, because it was just so appalling. I mean, that the information is certainly available, He acknowledged that there will be impacts, and he had acknowledged that we need to do a better study. And 12, 13 months have passed, and they haven't bothered to do that study. So I do really hope that doesn't get lost. It seems like the big focus is on health impacts, and obviously that's really important. But it isn't the only thing that's missing in their making this decision. So thanks for commenting on that, Jim. All right, that's my soapbox for the night. Joe Mariana, County Administrator. My appointment's under... Okay, let me do the... I've got some appointments to make. Let me do that before I move over to Joe. We've got some annual appointments that I... need to announce. Tompkins County Area Development Board of Directors Will Burbank to the Board of the Chamber of Commerce. The legislature chair has a designated seat, so I'll be in that seat with Jim Dennis as the alternate. To the Cooperative Extension Liaisons, Will Burbank and Dave McKenna. To local advisory boards on assessment review, Frank Proto to Caroline and Danby, Dave McKenna to Newfield and Enfield, Brian Robison to Groton, to Dryden, Mike Lane, and myself, Town of Ithaca, Will Burbank, Dooley Kiefer, and Peter Stein, to Lansing, Pat Pryor, and Dooley Kiefer, Ulysses, James Dennis, City of Ithaca, Carol Chalk, Kathy Luce Herrera, Leslyn McBean Clairboyne, Pam Agassi, and Nathan Shinagawa. To the Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee, Leslyn McBean Clairboyne as chair, and to the Ethics Advisory Board, Dooley Kiefer as chair. In addition, I would like to appoint to the Civil War Commission Eric Acree, with term extending to May 2015. Did I get them all?
Martha, did you get the GIAC for me?
That is under the consent agenda.
Oh, yeah.
We'll do that in a little bit. Okay. Joe Mariana, County Administrator.
Thanks, Martha. I have a few things on my report list tonight. I'm assuming that three of your colleagues are absent tonight because I heard I'm doing another PowerPoint. So I'll take responsibility for the empty chairs, I guess. I do want to start my report, though, by yielding some of my time to Paula Younger, who is going to report on the annual report for the compliance plan, which you recall. Paula led the development of the county's compliance plan, has been able to pull a number of things together in a remarkably short period of time to bring us into compliance, and wants to present the annual report tonight.
Thanks, Joe. Good evening, everyone. Perhaps I might take fault for talking about compliance as opposed to your PowerPoints. I don't know. We could be in running for that. You have in your red packets the 2012 County Compliance Year-End Report. This is installment number 2 of what will be an ongoing annual reporting activity to just keep you abreast of how we are doing in terms of implementation of the compliance program and any new developments that might come about in terms of federal or state requirements that would require us to change or augment our program in some way. This year, our work was divided into 4 tasks, and I'm only going to highlight 2 of them. One is the initial steps we took to a multi-phase approach to put in place a risk assessment protocol that our departments can use. We felt that it was time to really put a spotlight on what risks means within the context of compliance, and we started to raise awareness by launching a questionnaire. And attachment A of this report gives you an outline of that questionnaire. And what we attempted to do was to look at what is termed the 8 elements of an effective compliance program and turn them into sort of questions. And we asked 5 of them. They focused on things like policies and procedures, how you communicate changes in regulations and policies with staff, how you monitor access and the distribution of information, and whether or not, unique to your own operations, you have protocols in place for identifying waste, fraud, and abuse. This took some considerable time, probably more than what we as the compliance committee had anticipated, but what it did, it just opened our eyes to just opportunity for more dialogue, more training, and so forth. The second item, or the second highlighted item in our activity, was starting up the whole process of instituting a package or battery, if you will, of IT policies. It is time. It is time that we started to look at information security, database access, changing of passcodes, acceptable use policies for email and smartphones and other types of electronics. It is time. It is time because we are now also seeing new requirements with regard to HIPAA and something called high tech and some whole lot of other little things that I won't take time to explain. But what we realized is that we need to take the first step on doing an assessment of where we were lacking in policies. Next step now, we're looking at draft policies. And through our Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee, and I believe our GO Committee, you have somewhere in the neighborhood of about 7 or 8 IT policies that will come down the pike throughout this operating year. So on the last page of the report, you just find a brief summary of what's expected for 2013. So once again, we're going to continue with the IT policies. We will always continue with our staff outreach and training. We also want to look at improving our protocols for exclusion screening. We have a policy for that. We now explain the process, but now we need to do better at monitoring to make sure that it is followed in a consistent fashion. And then lastly, and I just mentioned this a few moments ago, we know that we need to take a closer look now to this new Health Information Technology for Economic and Clinical Health Act. And that's a mouthful. So that will keep us busy in 2013. I would like to thank all of my Compliance Committee colleagues for yet another successful year, which includes our county attorney, our county finance director, director of mental health services, public health, DSS, and information technology. I also want to thank a gentleman by the name of Jake Lopez, who was a volunteer intern on behalf of the Cornell Institute for Public Affairs. Jake was the one that took all of the data from the departments and put it into this really nice attachment A that you have and summarized all of the questionnaire responses. Jake is a young Iraq veteran, and he came back home, thank goodness, and he's getting his master's, and he wants to go work in local government back in his home state of Wisconsin, and I just felt the need to thank him.
Thank you, Paula. That's great. Great story. Thank you very much, Paula. And this is a great document. Any questions? And tomorrow morning at 10 is training for compliance? Okay, and if county legislators haven't signed up and won't be going there will be another opportunity?
Certainly.
Okay.
I can do that.
All right. Thanks very much, Paula.
And I had a couple more things on my list, and then I'm going to close with a summary of the accomplishments for 2012, and I promise you we will go mercifully quick because I gave you hard copies of it. It's also going to be posted, in fact, is now on the webpage, so if anybody wants to see it. But before we get to that, just a couple of updates. Work began today on the courthouse renovation, so that 120-day project kicked off today. And I'm happy to say the contractors aren't wasting any time. There's already clear activity going on in that space, so that project, long awaited, has started. Quickly on the state budget, I really don't have a heck of a lot more to report than I reported to you 3 weeks ago when we first got the budget. It's very easy to understand it. Carl talked about it. It's flat, mostly. Almost everything in that budget says that we're going to keep things the way they were the year before, which after the last couple of years, we tend to take as good news. It's not, because revenues are flat, expenditures aren't, which puts additional burden on us. But in terms of the major impacts of this budget, we don't see the kinds of cuts that we have seen over the past 3 or 4 years. It is, in fact, mostly flat. If there's a specific concern at all, it's in youth, where cuts that were implemented in earlier years are essentially now in the run-out phase. The full year's worth of effect is occurring. We're concerned about youth. We're also concerned about, call them dark clouds, nothing that's specific in the budget, but a couple of significant areas that we have to watch out for. One is in the mental health area, where the federal government has said to the state that you overcharged us for billions of dollars of Medicaid costs. It's all within the mental health area. Everyone in that sector is holding their breath to find out what that may mean in the future in terms of a trickle-down effect on county mental health operations. the last we heard, and we heard some of these discussions in Albany at NYSAC, it looks like a repayment by the state could be somewhere in the range of $1.5 billion a year in repayments. So again, it's not a specific cut in this budget. It's a dark cloud that we have to watch out for, and Susan Romanchek-Smeltzer is and will report to us on that. The other similar concern, only because it's not specific, is in the public health area, where there's been a $40 million cut in state money for the health department. There's a concern there, too, about the trickle-down effect. What happens if the state can't contain those cuts within its own operations, and they are potentially passed down to counties? So those are the two large areas that we have to watch out for as time goes on. The big item, headline item in the budget, continues to be the pension smoothing argument. You've seen articles in the newspaper recently about that. Is it good policy, bad policy? We continue to basically keep our powder dry on a reaction to it. We heard the budget director for the state, who, by the way, is a brilliant, pragmatic person at NYSAC, talk about their perception of what this means, and it's basically taking some of the savings in Tier 6 that we have to wait a long time to realize in our own budgets and push some of those savings forward. And they've worked with actuaries to try to do that to be able to smooth out these pension costs. We've also received some information from NYSAC and from the state that compares that flat approach to what we might expect over the next 25 years in terms of pension rates if nothing like this happens. So we'll be doing some work on the spreadsheets to see if this may make sense for us. I'd say at this point, it's doubtful that it does make sense, but we want to take a look carefully at what it might mean, especially if we were to invest savings in specific areas like paying for capital with those savings up front, realizing benefits down the road that might hedge our bet, basically, on this plan. But more work is needed. That'll have to come over the next few months. We don't have to make a decision about it at the earliest until our budget time this summer and fall. With respect to human rights, search committee is almost all together. I'm still trying to fill a couple of spots on the search committee. Did meet with staff today just to make sure everything was going fine. There it is. So that situation, the search will be going forward soon as we can put the search committee together. The last quick update, at the budget committee next week, Jackie Thomas is going to be presenting a summary of the smart work projects. We talk about smart work all the time. Carl talked about lean. We've compiled all the smart work projects that we've done and summarized them, and that's going to be presented in the budget committee next week. We'll also circulate that to the entire legislature because we talk about it a lot and really haven't compiled all that stuff so you can see in a single document what we've done. And I think you'll find that it's pretty impressive. I'm going to now, unless there's any questions.
Will?
Yeah, Joe, one other cloud on the horizon, of course, is at the national level, the potential for sequester.
Yes.
And in our Health and Human Services Committee meeting, there was some discussion on the impact of the DSS and potentially other departments. So I'm just wondering if we have contingency plans for any of that. Or
there are no contingency plans. The good news, I guess, is that we do have reserves.
Yeah.
So in a crisis situation, we can call upon those reserves. We don't know yet, particularly in social services, what impact that may have. I know COFA is worried about a $40,000 potential cut, but DSS, I don't think they've been able to quantify it yet.
Thank you.
Any other questions for Joe?
Okay. I promise to go quickly through here. As I'm doing it, and as I go quickly, this is a consolidation of some of the major departmental accomplishments that occurred over the course of 2012. The preface is, this is a Reader's Digest version that we surveyed all the departments. This is culled down from a much larger list. And I want you to know, too, that whenever the departments submitted things, often the words that preceded these bullets that you'll see on the slides were in cooperation with, in conjunction with. So there's a lot of partnership and teamwork that goes into all of these accomplishments that you'll see on the sheet. I think we had almost all the departments respond to it, so we'll be able to go through most of the activities from our departments. I'll only hit on a couple of points per slide, and again, you've got hard copies, and it'll be on the webpage. Beginning with the airport, we had another good year at the airport. It wasn't quite as good as the year before, but that was to be expected in that we lost the flight to LaGuardia. We still came very close to hitting the prior year's employment numbers. And if you look at the information that Bob submitted there, this period of time, 2010 to 2012, has been historic in terms of the number of in-plane passengers at our airport. And as you look through the list, you'll see also a significant amount of construction occurred, much of which was completed at the airport over the course of 2012. In assessment, this is really a crown jewel of the county, and if anybody wants to know in New York State, can consolidations work? I think we ought to point to our assessment department to show that it can. We're absolutely the gold standard in terms of the quality of our assessments. This is the 14th time in a row that we finished the year at a uniform percent of value. That's exactly where we are supposed to be. Everybody's supposed to be, but many aren't. There's also good things going on in terms of innovation in that department, as evidenced in that second bullet, where by digitizing a process that had been done manually, we are saving 14,000 pages of paper every year in the assessment department alone. The assigned counsel program, significant increase in their caseload last year. At the same time, they stayed within their budget, which is a mandated budget, and this is really a pat on the back to what's happening over there with Julia and Wes doing their best to control this program. Also secured a $269,000 grant as a part of the Indigent Defense Program. Board of Elections, this is pretty remarkable. Six elections this year, all of which were problem-free, including the big one, the presidential election. The second bullet is one that I think is important for us, too, that if you recall, Sandy hit just as the elections were occurring. Our folks were able to accommodate over 500 voters from nine surrounding counties, nine counties impacted by Sandy, to help them vote through our assistance. So some very good things at the Board of Elections, as always. COFA, again, just a couple of points in COFA, the Countywide Needs Assessment. You received the presentation by Lisa a couple of months ago. You saw that it was excellent, gave us great guidance and insight into what the needs are of the senior community. Also, the Care Transitions Program. I'm sorry Frank isn't here because he's taken this one particularly under his wing. It's doing well. Administration, several things that we've put on our list. The budget, I think that's really an accomplishment of this body, but we did stay within parameters. We did maintain services. I think the document itself was a better document. The broadband support that we provided through Paula to Pat Pryor's committee is important, and we're beginning a new web page, which very soon you're going to see what that page looks like, and you're going to see a significant improvement. The clerk, it's always good to see the word completed in these reports. They are done with a remarkable effort to digitize the county's archival records. Those that we have to maintain are now at the Seneca Army Depot. Everything else is electronic. And now we're beginning to extend this program to surrounding towns, and we secured a grant to help us do that. So in terms of technology, I think our clerk would be considered at the leading edge within New York State. The district attorney, great deal of activity within the DA's office, and what you'll see there is the DA's office also did a good job in finding revenues to help support their operations, including some very specific operations in 2012. They also participated in the gun buyback program earlier this year. I guess that should be a 2013 accomplishment. Emergency management. Lots of activity in the emergency management area, including we finished the study. We're beginning to implement the recommendations. You'll be hearing more about an accreditation initiative over the coming weeks and months. Responded to Hurricane Sandy, and even though that really didn't hit us, it did give us a good dry run for our Emergency Operations Center. We're using that as a learning experience to get better. Facilities, you know that Arell and his crew of facilities did a lot of work over the course of this year, including the Human Services Annex, which I think all of you would agree is an excellent project, and the legislative chambers, which has been a challenge, and again, it's underway now. Finance, very high bond ratings, AA2 is almost as good as you can get. Our liquidity, which we've identified as an issue over the past several years, got better this year. We issued a bond with a rate that was at historic levels, under 2%. And I should say in that fourth bullet, an unqualified audit report doesn't mean that the person doing the audit was unqualified. It means that there were no problems that were identified by the auditors. The health department, a number of things here, but including We had a whooping cough outbreak that they responded to very quickly and effectively. And I think, as you all know, the trial was closed this year, and that was had a significant effect on the operation. They handled that transition extraordinarily well. The highway division with the new highway manager, Jeff Smith, doing very good work, including a $500,000 grant to make sure the Pine Tree Road project could go forward in the way that this legislature wanted it to, meeting several policy goals along the way. We got the money back for Hanshaw Road, not only because of our highway folks, but also because of friends at the state DOT. A fellow named Joe Flint especially went to bat for us to recover that money, so Hanshaw is back on track. Several other accomplishments in highways, roads, and bridges, and again, you can see in your hard copy the statistics that were compiled there. IT was a real focus for us in 2012. We had a retreat that looked at where we needed to devote resources, and then we did in a number of areas. Beyond improving systems, ITS also played an important role with the Independent Redistricting Commission, was providing great support, probably essential support for that effort, and is doing a number of other things to bring our systems really to 21st century standards. I guess the other thing that I want to point out here, the first bullet on this page is really important. We are really pioneering the next generation address system for 911 centers that are tied to GIS instead of the old rotary phone numbers. So the work that's being done by Greg and Katty Ann in that area is really important to the way 911 centers are operated throughout the state and probably the country. This is really important stuff. Within the legislature, the clerk of the legislature, again, in terms of technology, we've scanned now journals of the legislature going back to 1817. I was hoping Frank was going to be here because I would have made a comment about him remembering those meetings, but I didn't. We're also live streaming now on the Internet, so we're not only televised on local access, we're live streaming on the Internet through work that the clerk staff has done with IQM2. In mental health, lots of important things happening here, including this transition to this new home health approach. Very important transitions going on there, and I think Sue is doing a great job as the new commissioner. You'll note that we provided service to almost 2,500 individuals over the course of 2012. Personnel, here we go again, dealing with a significantly expanded workload. We received almost 6,900 job applications on behalf of most public employers in the county last year. Compare that to 2 years ago. It's over double the volume without additional staff, and we've done it through the electronic online application system. We ratified the blue-collar contract. We recruited mental health and highway top spots. Great deal of activity in personnel and planning. The $1 million grant for Cleaner, Greener Southern Tier, the 20-year capital improvement plan, incredible document that was done, the strategic tourism plan with Tourism Now in the planning department, that was undertaken there. We prepared the work for the energy-related improvements in the public safety building using federal stimulus dollars, and we're implementing the Climate Showcases grant with several projects there. Probation's very high success rates in probation, both adult and juvenile. You can see the statistics there. Go to the bottom bolded lines, and you can see success rate, which are enviable success rates. The sheriff attacked overtime, lowered overtime significantly in the course of 2012, also began to downsize the fleet in terms of smaller cars consuming less fuel, has been very aggressive in that and has had significant effect. Interesting one is the jail gardening program. Very creative approach that's done there, and I'm sure that will continue into the future. Working toward accreditation of law enforcement. It's an ongoing effort. In DSS, More with less, 5% more Medicaid cases, 6% more food stamp cases, no additional staff. So again, in terms of the productivity of the county workforce, you can see it in those numbers, and you know the volumes of individuals that we serve in both of those programs. Adoption rates way up over the year before, up 24%, and still doing extremely well in placing foster kids with relatives, which is the best of the possible alternatives. In solid waste, again, a very productive year in solid waste. The 5-year contract for the collection of recyclables was put together this year. A grant recently approved, $200,000 to do food scraps and organic processing at Cuba Compost. So a number of things that were done at the Solid Waste Center division this year. Workforce investment served a disappointingly large number of people. There's still a lot of people that need the services of our workforce investment operation, almost 1,000 people into the one-stop center. Many of those were, upwards of 1,000 were placed and retained. We continue to provide rapid response to folks who are affected by plant closures and things like that. I think this is the last slide, youth services. You've seen recently the 2012 needs assessment that was done by Amy Hendricks and her staff. We also secured an important two-year grant to help Schuyler County on work with underage drinking and drugs there, a survey of a lot of middle and high school kids on the use and abuse of substances, did a smart work project trying to rationalize the municipal and rural youth services system within the county. And I guess I should note the basalt involvement in the basalt response as well. So that's about as fast as I can talk and about as concise as we can be in summarizing an accomplishments list that could have been many times more than this. So as we look at some of the significant issues that the legislature deals with all the time, the budgets, the tax levies, the major policy issues, I think it's important for everyone to know, too, how much happens every day at the department level by people who are really dedicated to public service. And this hopefully gives you a sense of what that work consists of. I think you already know, but also our public, the people that pay our taxes. By looking at the internet and seeing documents like this, I think it helps them understand where their money goes as well. So that's my report. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Joe. And I hope you'll express on behalf of the whole legislature to the department heads, you know, our admiration and appreciation for these accomplishments. It is really tremendous. And my only comment would be next year start at the back of the alphabet. I always feel bad for the Z's and the Y's and. But this is great. Are there any questions for Joe? All right. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
County Attorney Jonathan Wood.
I do not have a report.
Okay. Thank you. Finance Director David Squires.
I start off with some good news for the year. The first month sales tax was up 10% for the county. And last year, we started off strong, so 10% over last year is very nice. One of the issues, you just saw a slide up there, accomplishments for the year. We really turned around the county's liquidity. At the end of each year, I mean, we really sweat that we'll be able to make it through the month of January. This year, we didn't have to worry about that. We ended up with our cash balance increased at the end of the year. And this week was rather exciting because we were getting large checks written by the towns who were bringing in their returns. And so, for example, we got $7 million for the town of Ithaca, $7 million from the city of Ithaca, I think $7 or $8 million from Lansing. So we're a couple of runoff right now. And another reason why liquidity is stabilized somewhat is while the state of New York has definitely been restrained in increasing funding to counties, they are making concerted effort to pay on time. Today, we got $1.3 million for TCAT, which in the past that could be, they know it's supposed to be coming February, but they don't know when. And it certainly helps when this money comes in to we turn it around to TCAT quickly because they have liquidity problems. Also, so that's the good news.
Thank you. You stopped there, so there's no bad news. Thank you so much, David. Peter?
I have a question. Does the town of Ithaca actually write a check?
Yes.
Like a check that I've seen, it says $7 million
yes.
on it?
Huh.
It's quite long.
Any other questions for David?
My concern is, does it clear?
Right. No comment. That's great news. Thank you, David. All right, we have the consent agenda. If you have anything to pull off, please just let us all know. Resolution A, ID 3993, authorization to accept Department of Homeland Security grant, Sheriff's Office. Resolution B, ID 3994, off?
That's off.
B, okay. Resolution C, ID 3995, authorization to accept New York State Child Passenger Safety Seat grant. Revised Resolution D, it's in your packet, ID 3996, authorization to appropriate Department of Homeland Security grant funding. Revised Resolution E, also in your packet, ID 3997, authorization to appropriate Department of Homeland Security grant funding. Resolution F, 3998, authorization to accept Project Lifesaver donation. Resolution G, ID 3999, was that off or? Okay, budget adjustments, public health. And revised Resolution H, ID 3980, award of 2013 Strategic Tourism Implementation Grants. And I have some appointments to the Advisory Board on Indigent Representation, Christine Shaw. Paula Wright to the Criminal Justice Advisory Alternatives to Incarceration Board. To the Substance Abuse Subcommittee of the Mental Health Services Board, William Maxwell and Kathleen Marco Blair. To the Greater Ithaca Activity Center, Nathan Shinagawa. Is there a motion on the consent agenda? Kathy Luce, seconded by Leslin. All in favor, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. Those are unanimous. So let us go to capital plan review. I don't see any staff waiting for anything in particular, so we'll just go right to the agenda. So Mike Lane, Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We had a capital plan review committee on February 13th. One of the things we spent some time was talking about the old library, and with the removal now of the records storage from there, and some of the criminal justice programs, we're down to, I think, just one program, the day reporting, we have to think about. So we're trying to decide, you know, what to come to this legislature with in the future and say, what do we do? How do we dispose of the old library? Do we keep it? Do we sell it? Do we take down the building and land bank it? Many of those alternatives are out there. Are there other people that are looking for it? We've charged our county administrator with beginning to draft a working memorandum with various issues here, looking at some of the recommendations from the past, and we'll be working in the committee structure in the future about that issue. We spent an awful lot of time talking about the interior of the renovations for the old courthouse, including furnishings that have been recommended by the architects. We still haven't come to a conclusion about the chairs, folks. There are two more chairs in the office. If you haven't gone in, Kathy, the board clerk's office, Kathy Colbert's office, please try them out. Make your comments known. I think we have come to the conclusion that there's no one-size-fits-all, that nobody's going to – we can't get full agreement on whatever chairs we pick. So – get your comments in there early, and we'll have to make a choice at some time of a chair if they're going to match. The we have scheduled a special meeting at the request of the architects, and that will be on March 6th at 1:30 p.m. And the reason for that is to look at finishes that will be in the interior.
Thank
Glad
you,
to answer any questions.
And that's at the old jail, right? That means?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you, Mike. Will?
So, Mike, I tried the chairs are out there tonight, and I've sort of lost memory of the ones we had tried before. When the committee comes to a final choice, will you at least try to go into the samples back and give us one last shot saying, okay, this seems generally acceptable to most of us?
Don't know if those samples are all still available here. I will bring that up at the special meeting with the architects.
Thank you.
But this is committee work, so.
Well, it is committee work that directly affects
understood.
The body as a whole, as it were.
Jim?
I'm sure you'll rule it committee work, so I'm not going to say it. I will talk to Mike privately.
Okay. Any other comments? All right. Thank you very much, Mike. Government Operations Committee, Pat Pryor, Chair.
Yes, Government Operations will meet next Tuesday, February 26th, from 10 to noon. This is the first month of our new meeting schedule, so see you then.
All right, thank you very much. Planning, Energy, and Environmental Quality Committee. Now, Carol's not here, and Will, you are vice, no, Pam is vice chair, correct? And she's not here. Dooley, will you report for PEAK, please?
I'd be glad to.
Thank you.
We met on February 4th. We had a fairly detailed presentation by Commissioner Marks on the projects that he is overseeing, particularly Biggs Project, and the way the different designs are changing. But mostly it was an organizational meeting where we talked about liaison duties, what we're interested in getting reports on. And any firm decisions have really been put off until the next meeting. The only actual item of business was the resolution that you've already passed on consent. So that's the end of my report, except for saying we're going to meet again, but I don't have the date in front of me.
Actually, we do have resolution I, not on consent.
Not on consent. Okay. So. Resolution I. This is the one that we, the one item of business we acted on in our meeting and which you're now getting to. Authorizing New York State Department of Transportation Master Mass Transportation and Capital Project Supplemental Agreement Number 4, TCAT and Tompkins County, providing reimbursement to TCAT and Tompkins County for monies already spent. I'd move it.
Seconded by Will. Any discussion? Ready to vote. All in favor of resolution I, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, that's unanimous. Thank you. Anything else? Thank you, Dooley. Broadband Committee, Pat Pryor, Chair.
We have not heard yet the outcome of the grant application that we're still waiting for. There have been several of us among those who worked on the application who've made contacts with those people that we know to contact to try to find out any update on what's happening. To no avail at this point. Having talked with a number of the members of the committee and thought it over quite a bit, I am holding off on scheduling the next meeting of the committee because as much as people are anxious to work on next steps, we really need the information in order to know how to proceed at this point. So we are still in a waiting mode. And I'll be sure to let you know as soon as we hear anything.
I think as soon as we hear, we'll probably hear you from Lansing. So
I suspect you're correct.
Thank you, Pat. Any questions? Okay. Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee. Jim Dennis, Chair.
Thank you. Monday afternoon at 4 o'clock is the first meeting of the new committee. The agenda will be out, obviously, before the meeting, and you'll all be able to take a look at it. The other thing I would like to mention is the DOF search, or Director of Finance. We are doing first-round interviews, and somebody please help me. I don't remember the day. I haven't written it. It's home. 27 and March 1st.
Yes.
Right. And there are six people we are interviewing at that point. And stay tuned.
Okay. Any questions?
That concludes my report. Unless there are some questions.
Any questions for Jim? Kathy Luz.
Do any of the applicants have a neat white mustache?
No.
We haven't seen
them.
We don't think so.
Our current finance director doesn't either, so...
Just asking. That's all.
Used to. All right. Thank you, Jim. Public Safety Committee, Brian Robison, Chair.
Thanks, Martha. I may as well start. I believe B was pulled off consent. Is that right? Okay. I'll move Resolution B, authorization to appropriate legislative award received in 2012 to the 2013 budget.
And seconded by Leslin. And Dooley, you pulled it off.
I pulled it off because there is no indication in the resolution what the source of money is that we are receiving. It mentions two senators who brought us the news, but there's no source of funds. And so I hope that staff could find that out. Maybe the sheriff can tell us, and that would get put in either as an explanation or into the resolution itself. And with that, if you're agreeable to that change, I don't see any reason not to vote on this.
Yeah, I don't have a problem if, Kathy, when we get that information, can it be added to the bottom? And maybe Joe knows.
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know.
Okay. Thank you. Well, we'll take care of that. Then, ready to vote on B?
Can somebody just clarify for me what it is we're changing?
There is no mention in the resolution what the source of funds is that we're accepting. And it would be good to have that information with the resolution.
So what exactly is it that you're suggesting? Where will you be changing? And if, even though you can't say the exact number, where will it be put? And
wherever our
like?
Legislative staff chooses to put it. An explanation at the bottom is fine if that's the easiest thing. Whatever.
I just wanted to be clear.
I would add it as an explanation.
Great.
So we'll change the resolution itself, but it'll be in the documentation. All right, ready to vote on B, please. All in favor, please raise your hand.
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? That's unanimous. Rest of your report?
Yep. Public Safety met on February 11th. There were a slew of resolutions that were passed, and you heard them under consent. They're all good, and they were all money coming in, which is always a good thing. We got the sheriff's monthly report. We also had a presentation from our LETS, specifically it was Jim Steinmetz. He's the chief of police at Cuga Heights, and Kim Moore from IT. They reviewed their accomplishments from 2012 and their goals for 2013. All the goals are designed to make law enforcement run more efficiently through the use of technology. If you need me to get specific, I can't because they're like above my head. But at any rate, I'm sure they would be willing to do that if you do have specific questions. Towards the end of the meeting, Lee Shurtleff came in. He had in his hands, hot off the facts, a grant that he had just received. They put in sometime last summer for a fully funded $2.8 million communications interoperability project and equipment that they're getting up at Doors. And I know we'll be talking more specifically about that tomorrow at ECROC. So, but that's good news, too. I have asked members of the committee to look at our existing advisory boards. Want to see if there's any that may be obsolete or maybe can be combined with other boards, and that's kind of going along with charter review that I know is going to be occurring this year. So we'll be working on that. Our next meeting is Monday, March 11th, and I'll be happy to answer any questions if I can.
Thanks very much, Brian. Will and then Dooley.
Yeah. Brian, in our packets tonight, or I guess it was on the desk, actually, there was a letter from a gentleman that had some concerns about the activities of the Sheriff's Department. I was just wondering if the committee would be looking into that or what.
I just saw it for the first time tonight myself. There is a complaint procedure in place. The only thing I can tell you is it's been CC'd to county administration and to the sheriff, and I will speak with both of them. And if it needs to go, it's not normal that things of that nature would go to committee level, although I guess it's not out of the realm of possibility. But Joe, do you know what we're talking about?
I don't. I don't have a copy of that.
All right.
But if someone will forward it to either me or Jonathan, we will definitely follow up.
It was addressed to the legislature, and it came here, so we copied everybody, but I guess maybe just the hard copies went, not electronic. So
The reason I thought it was appropriate, it seemed, first off, it was just one person's perspective, so we have no idea. I assume there may have been a different view of what mm-hmm. happened. Mm-hmm. But as stated in the letter, it seemed like an unusual response from our department. So I don't know if that truly characterized what actually happened.
Well, it may be unusual to the author. I mean, who knows? Yeah. We've got, if I know nothing from seeing these sorts of things for many years, this is one side, and we'll certainly look into the other. But yeah, I don't think it's normal that a document such as this would be immediately forwarded to the legislature. But we will certainly.
Thank you.
Look into it. Sure.
I've got Dooley, Mike, and then Pat.
I'm going back to one of the consent resolutions, Resolution F, which is Project Lifesaver donation.
Mm-hmm.
And there was nothing in there to indicate what this is for, what Project Lifesaver is. So I asked our staff about it, and we figured out that this had to do with money to get another dog. And I wondered if
you...
No. Well, what is it? What is Project Lifesaver?
First off, there was a presentation given to the legislature about this project. It's actually GPS bracelets and so on for... Do you remember it now?
I do remember it now.
Okay.
Because there's nothing in the resolution, I couldn't remember what the phrase meant. Would it be possible to have something, maybe an explanation under this resolution, in just a reference to what it's about, bracelets, in the same way?
That's okay. A nod yes over here.
Okay, thank you.
Anything's possible.
So an explanation of Brian, Project Lifesaver.
Yes.
Yeah. Don't say that, Brian. Mike, and then Pat.
Brian, the news about the grant for the state for our interoperability is just terrific.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I really think we need congratulations to everybody who's worked on that effort. It's especially good in my part of the county, in the northeast section, and yours, because we work a lot, our emergency responders work a lot with Cortland County.
Mm-hmm.
And reading news reports, Cortland County got actually $6 million. And part of this will be interoperability between Cortland and Tompkins, which I think is really going to help us folks in our part of the county. And hopefully it'll also work with other counties that surround us as well.
Mm-hmm.
Cortland's been very fortunate in the amount of money that they got. I think back to when we were promised a lot of money for our upgrades. We didn't get it, but fortunately there'll be some upgrades in surrounding counties now.
Mm-hmm. And I would agree that some of this stuff, when you're dealing with different bandwidths and things of that nature, the ability to communicate just isn't there, or it's spotty at best. I know you mentioned my district. We actually deal with Cortland and Cayuga County,
right,
up in that corner, and everybody operates a bit differently. I wonder if Cortland got additional funds, because I know they're redoing their center actually and doing a changeover, which may be some of that. I don't know, but it's my impression that that Lee wrote the grant for $2.8 million and that it was fully funded. Cortland, that's what makes me think that maybe Cortland, their grant application, due to the changeover at their dispatch center, maybe have been written for a lot more. So,
they're putting up towers too.
Yeah, but all in all, yes, it's very good news for emergency services communications.
And I have an email from Lee. I think he helped Cortland write their grant, too. So
Lee did?
Yeah. So talk about collaboration, definitely.
So for that, they'll steal some of our personnel.
Oh, don't say that. I hope not. Pat?
I want to echo the comments that have been made about the grant. That's terrific news. I also wanted to go back to the comment that you made. I wondered if you could tell me, Brian, in relation to the letter of complaint that we received, you mentioned a complaint process. Yep. And I just wondered, can you confirm that is that entirely an internal complaint process? And the reason I ask is because having been connected with the city a number of years ago, one of the first things I did before I served on Common Council, I was on the Community Police Board, which is a civilian review process to take a look at complaints having to do with members of the police department in the city of Ithaca.
Yep.
And I don't know what the situation is at this time, but at that time, the county did not have any comparable kind of organization. And we, on a fairly regular basis, and not a lot, but several times a year, we received complaints at the city's organization about things that had happened involving county sheriff's department officers, and people came to the city because they had no place to go with the county, and they felt the way it was conveyed to us is that people didn't have the same level of confidence in an internal review process that they would have had if they knew that it was some measure of separation from the internal process, that there was an independent review kind of process. So I'm wondering if that is still the current situation, and if so, if there's ever been any discussion about anything more than what they do.
Okay. First off, let's get one thing out there for the record. The Community Police Board here, when you were on it, my name never came up, right?
That's correct.
I'm pretty sure it didn't. At any rate.
It's always about you, Brian.
No, I get these questions and I start feeling guilty about things that I didn't do.
Or there are other places that anybody.
Actually, Brian, that's why I brought it up. I just wanted.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate it. Currently, the sheriff's office, there is not a civilian review board. The initial investigations are done by the administration. Depending on the personnel that are the subject of the investigation, my recollection, we just had a presentation by them at public service or public safety about this. Remember?
No, I don't. I wasn't at that meeting.
Oh, you weren't? Okay.
No, because that's one thing I've been harping on is the complaint process.
Okay. And maybe we'll have them do a review again.
Yes.
They investigate if there is no satisfaction reached. I believe there's something in there to use CDRC to mediate some of this.
I don't know. I know, like, in the past.
Jonathan can use the microphone.
Oh, sure. Yeah, I know, like, in the past year, they've maybe referred, like, three or so civilian complaints or issues to me to look at, which usually they send me the police record and things like that, and sometimes I talk with the people. But we haven't referred anything to CDRC, but they do, you know, at least send them to me, and I do speak with the people involved and review the record.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I can answer it in that we do not have a civilian review board. And I will ask the sheriff or the undersheriff, I believe the undersheriff gave the presentation the last time, as to their complaint procedure. and we'll do it again. But
I don't believe the city of Ithaca has one either now or anymore.
Well, if they don't, then they've stopped it recently.
Oh, no, they've stopped it.
No, they still do. It's still existing.
Oh, they still have one.
Yeah, I think they do, Jim. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It is still there.
I mean, we could get into a big discussion about those, and maybe we will. But that might be committee stuff at this point, too.
Yeah,
as far as this complaint that was forwarded to all of us today, we will get it to the sheriff. I'm sure he's already got it. I think it's it was CC'd to him. And they will, at the very least, do an initial investigation. And I'll follow up with him.
Okay, it's a good topic for the committee. Leslin and then Peter?
That is what I was going to say. It's a couple of years now we've been talking about sort of the complaint process. We know it's internal, and, you know, we'll hopefully take it up at committee and continue with this.
There is a, I want to say it's a 2 or 3 page document outlining the whole complaint procedure and who hears what and that sort of stuff. I didn't think to bring it tonight because I didn't know this was going to be here.
But. Okay. All right, Peter?
This was sent by email to the committee?
No.
Oh, it's on the table, okay. It looked in the red folder.
Okay, all right. Thank you very much, Brian.
Yep.
Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee, Leslin McBean, Claiborne Chair.
Joe, thank you very much for sharing the information on the work towards looking into living wage policy, that we are moving in that direction. I appreciate it. Since our last WDIC meeting, I have nothing new to report. I just want to remind all my colleagues that this is February, Black History Month, and there are lots of activities happening throughout the city, educational, very great educational activities happening throughout our county that we hope that you will participate. And we, as a county, will be moving forward. Thank you, Joe and Paula, for the outline that you've sent on our hosting of the viewing and discussion of Race, the Power of an Illusion. So stay tuned. And WDIC will meet next, the 27th at 3:30.
Thanks very much, Leslin. Any questions? All right. Health and Human Services Committee, Kathy Luz Herrera, Vice Chair.
Thank you. So I promised Frank that I would wear a tweed jacket tonight. This is as close as I can get, just to get y'all in the mood. I'm going to make a very brief report, but as y'all know, Health and Human Services covers a lot of things. I have gratitude to the clerk of the legislature's office for providing draft minutes to jog my memory. Some of this stuff is pretty complex. Fortunately, County Administrator Joe Mariana mentioned some of the things. So if there are any big questions about this, I'm going to point right to Joe. We started out with the chair's report. Mr. Proto asked staff to provide preliminary information regarding potential impacts of the governor's proposed budget. We got a lot of word back, and he summarized it this way. He thinks two areas of concern will be youth services and mental health. Then we had reports from various department heads. The Human Services Coalition reminded us that agencies don't receive direct funding from the state, and Kathy Schlatter said that she hasn't heard from all agencies, but the Community Dispute Resolution Center, for example, last year they got a 63% funding reduction, and it looks like there's an additional 13% reduction being proposed. As Joe said, you know, it's flat, but when you're already starting with flat, keeping it flat is really, it makes it difficult to adjust to the economy. She also reported that John Spence of Better Housing in Tompkins County is concerned since the proposed budget would reduce funding as well as combining rural and urban funding that has previously existed. which has the potential of redirecting rural funds into urban areas. More on that later. Department of Social Services, Ms. Carey said overall funding would remain flat. However, she's concerned with potential shortages to the HEAP program. As you know, many of our residents rely on this. The problem is that the states stopped the funding that allowed furnace repairs and cleaning. It's stopped allowing it to increase available funds for heating and energy bills. So it's a problem. I'm going to stop there. Office for the Aging, Ms. Holmes said the department would be affected due to the reduction of HEAP funding since they administer the applications. State funding for aging services appears to be level, but there's a concern that the federal funding, which may have a 5.1% cut of approximately $41,000, will affect the agency. And the State Office of Temporary Disability said they would restore the funding, which is currently at 75%, but we don't know yet if that's going to happen. Mental health was a big topic. I will try to summarize it by saying that Dr. Smelser reported that although there's an increase in supportive housing funding, she anticipates the majority will be used in New York City, big surprise, due to recent concerns of housing units being completely full of individuals receiving mental health services. Local agencies share this concern, including Lakeview Mental Health Services, which is attempting to obtain this funding to move ahead with a housing program in Ithaca. The New York State Office of Alcoholism and Substance Abuse funding remains flat, and the Office for People with Developmental Disabilities has plans to close two developmental centers, including the Broome Developmental Center. Why is this important? The closures will result in over 2,000 employees being released over the next several years. And as Joe mentioned, there's overcharges or overbill that's being investigated and dealt with, and there's a lot of uncertainty with regard to that. Youth services is another big one. Ms. Hendricks gave an excellent report about it, and she said that the proposed redefinition of what a youth bureau is, coupled with cuts in funding, will shift funds from any youth bureau agency, not specifically a county or in New York City. In other words, this could take funding from the City Youth Bureau. The change would take effect in 2014. Let's see if I can find the important part. Under the new definition, City of Ithaca Youth Bureau currently receives $18,000 and in 2014 would receive nothing. So these are some big impacts for youth in Tompkins County. Mr. Proto, nope, that's another one I've already read. All right, let me go to the next page. This is good, we're getting through there. There was some discussion about the New York SAFE Act and the impact on mental health. Dr. Smelser expressed concern with the act as it relates to mental health programs. Assisted outpatient treatment program enables court-ordered treatment for mental health if they appear to be an individual who may hurt themselves or others. The problem with it is that the law also states that before a person can be released from the program, a reevaluation by the mental health department must be completed to determine the individual has become stable. Now, if you think about that, that means that everyone in Tompkins County that's being released would have to get a report from the mental health department. This is a huge unfunded mandate. I'm just summarizing here, but it's also kind of scary if you think about it, because there's concern regarding the requirement to report clients to the Department of Justice if they're deemed to be in danger of harming themselves or others. The SAFE Act doesn't specify what the criteria for the evaluation would be. As a result, hospitals are treating the law as though all people seeking mental health treatment need to be reported. With more than 200,000 hospitals in the state, 200,000 people in the hospitals in the state, it could mean a significant number of people involved. So that's a concern. We talked about this at Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee, where Larry Roberts spoke about the, and I was relating this at the Health and Human Service Committee, about the problem of scapegoating and blaming individuals with mental health issues for recent tragedies, when in fact they're often the victims of violent crime. We discussed a little bit with the health department, Mr. Krupa,
reported on the environmental health permitting software project that will enable a streamlined application process. The program would also create a database of information on well and sewer locations throughout the county. And once completed, other areas requiring permits such as food safety would be included. There was questions as to whether the towns would be able to contract with the health department or other municipalities, and that's probably likely. Also, at some point, we'll probably be able to accept credit cards. These are good things. We're trying to eliminate paper. We're trying to make things go faster. This is all very good. Oh, now my pages are all mixed up. I think we're getting close to the end here. Oh, here we go. I'm going back to the youth report because this is important. Ms. Hendricks spoke of how some children are not academically ready to go to college and there's a need to develop skill training in other areas. This is always fresh in our minds. Carl Haynes was here tonight talking about the importance of training. The committee discussed the transportation portion of getting youth to and from educational opportunities, and Ms. McAsee stressed the Tompkins Consolidated Area Transit's efforts to educate youth on the transportation it provides. More on that later. Last, I'm going to give you an outline of the DSS monthly caseload statistics, just an overview. The number of food stamp and Medicaid cases is continuing to rise. However, at this time, temporary assistance cases remain flat. Ms. Carey expressed concern that although unemployment benefits have been extended for a period of time, once they're exhausted, many families will find themselves in a difficult financial situation. We discussed homelessness earlier. I didn't touch on it a whole lot except to say that we've tried to find ways. It's easier to house an individual than it is a family, and we've tried to find ways to streamline the housing of families as fast as possible and then set them up with aid, where in the past we did it the other way around and it frequently resulted in some really bad situations. Ms. Carey, back to her, said that often when one member of the family becomes unemployed, staff suggests moving to avoid potential foreclosures in the future, and staff is continually reassessing how to best handle the increased number of clients to ensure benefits are received as soon as possible. My summary would be, Frank's summary is right. It's a youth and mental health services that we're concerned about, but if you listen to all of it, we're still in very precarious situation, and you know, we're luckier than a lot of counties, but we need to be vigilant because we're at the end of unemployment benefits for a lot of people, and we need to be prepared to help out people when they're in these precarious situations. So that's all I've got. Like I say, if you got questions, I'm going to look at Joe.
Thanks very much, Kathy Luce. Mike?
You're welcome.
Kathy, your comment about folks that are going to be going off of unemployment and hitting the rolls possibly of social services or food stamps or others. I recently was talking with someone from the Dryden Food Pantry, the kitchen cupboard out there, and they are now feeding, helping to feed, I should say, 800 people a month out of the kitchen cupboard in Dryden. And I know there are other pantries all around the county. And we need to keep that in mind. It's gonna get worse unless more people get back to work.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, I agree.
Thank you, Mike. Peter, and then Will.
Love Mike, is that 800 meals or 800 people?
800 people.
800 people, different people.
In other words, you might have a family of four, for example,
right, okay.
That kind of thing.
But you don't count twice if a person goes in a month.
No, they're the numbers that they're handing out food
that
for.
That is surprisingly large.
Yeah. Will?
Yeah, well, I want to thank Kathy for that really comprehensive report and or I guess both Kathy's for making this information available. I've been on this committee for several years, and in this last meeting I was just blown away by the amount of information we were given and also the amount of hurt that's out there that we're attempting to address. Kathy, just one thing I would clarify a little bit. We had an incredibly good report from Amy Hendricks of the Youth Bureau, and she based it on a survey that they have done, which is called the State of Tompkins County Youth. Mm-hmm. It is now on our website. I would encourage everybody to read it. Maybe we'll get some hard copies. But they are really, really not just doing the survey. They're going to be using this survey to rethink how they are framing all their programs. I think they're taking it very, very seriously. So
that's really good you mentioned that, because Frank had suggested at some point that perhaps we could ask Amy to come to the legislature and present the info, because it puts everything in a context, and it's really important. So maybe we can prevail upon her and the scheduling to do that. Good point.
Absolutely. Thank you. Leslie, did you have your hand up?
I did. Kathy, thank you also. I know you didn't see the committee dwelled a lot on homelessness, but you know, it is an issue, and yes, there's a lot of hurt, whoever used that phrase a minute ago. One of the things that I hope that we will continue as a body to lobby hard for and champion is just affordable housing for folks. We have people who can only stay in the shelter for a certain period of time. We understand that's what it's there for, temporary. But in leaving there, there's really a shortage, a lack of where people can go to afford some place to live here in Tompkins County. Even to rent a room sometimes, it's beyond what folks can afford. So, and a number of times they're not people who are counted in our homeless population because they're, you know, count somewhere at a friend, or they're not available to be able to answer questions to the survey. So I hope that we'll continue to really look and emphasize and pay attention to what's going on in terms of affordable housing here in this county. And all affordable is really relative, because even the places that we know provided affordable housing, it's no longer affordable. Let's just be honest about it. It's no longer affordable for a certain population of people in this county. So we need to be looking at that and helping wherever we can to champion that cause.
Absolutely. Thank you, Leslie. Jim?
I was at a meeting Saturday evening. It was a group of people who met at the Clarion Hotel, and it was called the Community Faith Partnership.
Faith Partners.
And there were 350 people in the room, mm-hmm. and they had a man named Joe Holland, who's a native of Ithaca. His father and grandfather were native Ithacans. And they were talking about homelessness and how this group, by fundraising and various activities on their own, have been very instrumental in closing the jungle. And there was the man was there who has rehabbed the house on Court Street. His name is Siegel, I believe his last name was. And many other people from the community, and I will say this, I've been to a lot of luncheons and little dinners around the community, and I was in this room, and I think I know a lot of people. I hardly knew anyone in the room, and these were all actors in the community who have taken upon themselves to work for homelessness and to solve some of that problem. The director of the rescue mission in Onondaga County was here, which is a pretty huge organization. They are now linked to Ithaca. They have a place that they operate in Cayuga County, I believe, mm-hmm. also. So while government is doing things, here's a group who has done an amazing job in raising money and working on solving the problem of homeless people in the community, most especially the Court Street house that will be opening up. And that was all done with money raised, volunteer help, and they got the job done. I was stunned by the meeting. I thought it was amazing because of the fact that, you know, we're in the government is in the business of working on those things, and there are groups in the community that are also doing the same thing. And it would seem like to me a really great opportunity to partner with groups like that.
Very good. Thank you very much, Jim. Anything else on HHS? Thank you very much, Kathy Luce. And my apologies to Jim Blizzard in the back that we haven't taken our recess to deal with the CD and the recording, but we just have two more reports, and I think we'll just go ahead. Facility and Infrastructure, Peter Stein, Chair.
Yeah. Quickly, just a couple of things to report on. We had a meeting before a week or two ago where we the committee, accepted the proposal of the Highway Department for a, what's it called, the best alternative plan. And we...
For Pine Tree Road, you mean?
For the Pine Tree Road project. There was not enthusiastic acceptance by the group, not a universe, not a completely enthusiastic acceptance by the group, but the feeling that it had to go forward. I expected to see that at this legislature, and I expected it to be discussed here, and was surprised that it wasn't on the agenda, but I found out that that's our procedure. The idea being the following, that there's a long process by which one goes from a problem to a solution. And at some point, the Highway Department assembles all the possible ways of dealing with the problem and rank orders them and brings that rank ordering to the committee. The committee then either accepts or rejects their decision as to what is the best of the available projects, the available solutions to the problem. They did that. This is done after a public meeting. These alternatives were presented to a public meeting. There were a lot of comments. There were a lot of comments made. Oh, by the way, I gave that the rationale or the procedure is in the packet. The members of the committee made suggestions. One of the Britain boys was there, and he made a lot of suggestions. Now, the fact that we accepted the fact that we accepted the recommendation of the Highway Department does not mean that that will become the final project. They now will look at the objections that were made to this project. At that meeting, I myself was impressed because each one of the objections that Mr. Britton made to the project, there was a plausible fix from the staff to the particular problem. So at least that was my perception of the discussion. So soon, in next month is the plan, you will get the final draft, which will be the preferred solution draft to any changes that they're able to make to meet the objections of people that were made about that in the presentations about that draft. So
you're saying, are you saying that it will come to us for a vote then?
Yes,
or?
Yes. The final solution will come to the legislature for a vote. It will be the preferred solution changed to accommodate whatever the department thinks should be accommodated.
Okay. All right.
So I just wanted to explain that. Mm-hmm. The other thing that I have to report on is you notice that I'm sure you all noticed the fact that a proposal to combine U.S. Airways and American Airways Airlines was announced, several weeks ago. I had a discussion with Bob Nicholas about how that will affect us and how that will affect air service from our airport. Well, in the first place, it doesn't mean it's going to happen. It has to be accepted by the U.S. Airways Board, and it has to go through the federal review. It can't happen before the end of the year. Now, Nicholas's view is that he doesn't think there will be much of a change. He thinks there's a good chance that we may get an additional a flight to Chicago out of that, because one of the reasons for the change is that American has a whole lot of Western and Central hubs and no Eastern hubs, and they would like to be able to bring traffic to their Western Western operations. He didn't think that there would be any service lost. It's conceivable that when I read the New York Times article on it, the New York Times said that the only place where there was really overlap between American and U.S. Airways was in the Washington hub, where both of them are operating, and so he would expect to see some of those flights lost in Washington. So anyway, that was Mr. Nicholas's wisdom, which I'm trying to pass on to you accurately.
Thanks very much, Peter.
We have our next meeting in another 2 days.
Okay. Thanks very much, Peter. Any questions? Dooley.
Well, it's not so much a question as an additional fact I wanted to share. There were only three of us on the committee who attended this meeting that Peter referred to about Pine Tree Road. I had gone there expecting to vote no and felt under tremendous pressure to not block the moving to the next stage of preparing a final design report, which is the report Peter's talking about. So I reluctantly and unhappily voted yes, which is why it's going forward. I doubt that I will support it in the next vote.
Yeah, I would like to just briefly add on that I respect Dooley's opinion some of the objections that she raised, but we have sort of a problem, and the problem is if we don't start going, Jeff is concerned that we may in fact be in a situation where we're not going to be able to do the construction, and the money will disappear. So that's why I think it was important to do that, to carry it forward to the next step. But we'll see what happens in the final version. I would hope that some of Dooley's concerns will be addressed.
I would comment that there's been a lot more than just one public meeting. There's been quite a bit of interaction with the community, so more than one formal public meeting and lots of other interaction. All right, thank you very much, Peter. Any other questions? All right, Economic Development Committee, Will Burbank, Chair.
Last but not least, I'll make this very quick. We had our first meeting of the Economic Development Committee on February 7th. We sort of talked about what we're going to be doing for the year. We realized that we wanted to start with basically an understanding of our local economy. And we had an excellent presentation from Arthur Armstrong of TCAD to that effect. We will be continuing this process moving forward, and I think we will be hearing from not only TCAD, but some other groups that are doing economic development, including TC3. Our next meeting is on March 7th, which is a Thursday at 3:30. And I do have a resolution.
Any questions for Will so far? All right.
Thank you. And this is appointments to the Industrial Development Agency. Most of whom will be familiar. There's one new name, which I will mention at the bottom, but this is Nathan Shinagawa, Jim Dennis, myself, Will Burbank, Martha Robertson, Larry Baum, and the new person would be Grace Chiang, and she would be a member at large. And I so move.
Is there a second? Second by Jim. Discussion? Leslie and then Brian.
So I'm interested in how the at large members got chosen, or was there an application? Could you just remind me how that works?
The Savanta is one of the at-large members, and he is in the second year of his two-year term, so that's a continuation. The Grace's appointment is because Jeff Furman, who had been the previous other at-large member, he had gone through two-year terms. He declined the invitation to stay on for two more years. So basically, I talked to IDA members, talked to Michael Stamm. We went through. We asked Jeff for his suggestions. We did not have a public. I didn't ask Marcia to issue a public announcement or anything like that. But we We did go through a number of people and consider a number of people, and we're very pleased when Grace said yes.
May I ask why not a public call for the at-large seat?
It is a chair's nomination and goes
regardless,
to the committee.
Regardless, I'm just asking why wouldn't we?
I guess nothing any more profound than we haven't done it that way before, and we wanted to get somebody on board. It was time to, you know, we have some serious votes coming up, and there was time in between sort of various conversations with Jeff and others, and we didn't really want to take extra time on that.
Can I get a little information on who Grace Chung is? I don't know who that is.
She is an architect she has been an architect with Holt Architects for many years, but last year went on her own, so she is the principal with Chang O'Brien Associates, located in the same building as Holt in the Crescent Building on Aurora Street. She's been involved in local projects for a very long time. She's a member of the Chamber of Commerce Board. I have known her since the late 90s when she worked on the Planned Parenthood renovation. I think she's worked with a number of other, many other local clients. So I thought she'd bring good balance, and I was very pleased when she accepted.
So, Martha, I have just another couple of questions. I'm remembering that there used to be a 7-member board and something got changed and it's now 6.
No, it's 7.
It's still 7?
The reappointments are in that first resolve, and the seventh, that's 6 people. The 7th is Savande.
Who's the 7th?
In the second resolve.
So okay, got it.
Okay.
Got it.
All right.
Got it. So I know the at-large seats come up, or all the seats come up, but I'm hoping that in the future that we will consider a more open process for the at-large seats, mm-hmm. So that other members of the public who have a keen interest in this board, because mm-hmm. there are people who have, over the years, expressed their interest, so that they will know about it and have the opportunity to apply to be a part of it.
Okay.
Right. Thank you.
Brian, you had your hand up?
Yeah, I just... I have a question. I see one member of the committee voted no. She's not here, so I can't ask her myself. But if you can, was it because of the persons appointed to the agency, or was it a process? Or
well, does anybody want to?
Brian,
I
honestly, I don't recall, I think it was Carol voted no,
it was
expressing her reasons at that point, but I think, I don't expect to characterize that.
Okay.
Jim and then Mike?
I was also there, and I was one of the people who was not supported by Carol, and there was not a reason. Remember pretty clearly, and it was a question that had she been here this evening, I think I would have asked. But
Mike,
I seem to recall Carol saying that she thought this group was all of more of one philosophical bent, and she wanted to see a broader group. That's what I remember her saying.
Yeah, I've talked to her about that, and not at the committee, but I don't think she knows Grace Chang at all, and I don't think she's talked to Grace Chang about her views, so I am kind of mystified by that. But so, Kathy Lewis?
I'm just going to take a minute. Is this on? I can't tell. Can y'all hear me?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I agree that there's some very important votes coming up. There's a lot of density that's going to be increased downtown. As many of y'all know, there's some concern that an abatement might be offered, and yet the jobs that would be created might not be living wage. And there's a lot of concern about that, especially for those of us that live and have constituencies downtown.
I believe that the concern that may have been raised by Carol is a legitimate one, as is the concern that there could be more diversity, not just in gender, but also in race, especially given the population of our county and of the downtown that's going to be very much affected by these projects. So I would not disparage someone's observations. In fact, I would say that being in the minority of one, or even, you know, if Grace was alone in voting no against something, having a majority vote against you is certainly not unknown to many of us, but the minority report is often an important one, and when there is not a very transparent process, it does become a concern to the public, especially when tax abatements are granted to a project that may not create livable wage jobs. So I respect the remarks that may or may not have been made by Carol in her vote, and I appreciate Leslin for bringing this up. I hope that y'all will just consider in the future, as Leslin has suggested, a more transparent process, and also the notion that unanimity is sometimes the enemy of democracy, in the sense that a full discussion can sometimes cover many sides of an issue instead of going directly to 100% or even, in this case, 80% in favor of something.
You know, I just have to say, I apologize that there wasn't a public, press announcement, et cetera. But I will tell you, first off, I do not think it's fair for anybody to try to report what Carol said or anybody who wasn't here and then pile on with that. I will tell you that, as far as I can tell, there is no political litmus test in, you know, see what's in the note here about what the criteria are. I am kind of not, I don't think it's appropriate that we have some kind of political litmus test that is unwritten and unvoted on and clearly in some people's individual minds. As far as diversity, looks to me like out of seven, we have two Asians, an African-American, and finally we have a second woman, which I'm pleased about. I'm not sure. I'm not sure what else we could do here. Nathan?
Yeah, no, I mean, I just, if I may just voice that I feel offended, because this is, whenever there's Asian-Americans on the board, I have heard this is like the third time in the past 4 years that I've heard somebody say, oh, well, there isn't enough diversity, as if Asian Americans are not people of color. So it's just very offensive to me, and I haven't said it the two other times, but I've decided to say it now. Secondly, I wanted to know, didn't you go through, I mean, before you chose Grace, right, were there other candidates that you also reviewed, Martha? And are you allowed to talk about that?
I'd be happy to talk about that. We're having an executive session soon. I'd be happy to talk about that, but it's essentially a personnel issue, and I don't think that's appropriate in public session. Leslin?
I have a different question, but let me just be clear that my concern is not about whether candidates were reviewed. My concern was about it being, especially the at-large seats. I understand the designated seats, that we consider a more public process so that others who are interested can apply and go through the same review. My question is, when does this committee meet? Can you please remind me?
When does the IDA meet?
Yeah.
The third Thursdays at 3:30.
The third Thursdays at 3:30.
The next meeting is this coming Thursday.
Thank you. Where?
In the old jail.
Thank you.
Are we ready for a vote on Resolution J? All in favor, please raise your hand. Opposed. That passes 9-3. All right. Anything else, Will?
And that concludes my report.
Can I get a motion on the minutes of January 29th, please? Moved by Jim, second by Pat. Any comments? All in favor, please raise your hand. Oh, all in favor of the minutes, please raise your hand. One, two, three, four. Opposed. That passes 11-1. Is that, are we all here? Okay. All right, I'd like a motion to go into executive session, please, to discuss a personnel matter, and we will not, I do not expect we will go into take any business, any action after the session. Moved by Pat, seconded by Dooley. All in favor, please raise your hand. Any opposed? All right, we will be take a break. Please be back in your seats at 8:15. Thank you.